Moving the table away from the back wall, Odrade began laying out straps and adjusting pads. She moved methodically, checking that everything had been provided on the small ledge beneath the table. Mouth pad to keep the agonized one from biting her tongue. Odrade felt it to be sure it was strong. Mirbella had a muscular jaw. Mirbella watched Odrade work, keeping silent, trying to make no disturbing noises. Valanda returned with spice essence and proceeded to fill the syringes. The poisonous essence had a pungent odor. Bitter cinnamon. Catching Odrade's attention, Mirbella said, "I'm grateful that you're supervising this yourself." "She's grateful," Valanda sneered, not looking up from her work. "Leave this to me, Belle." Odrade kept her attention on Mirbella. Valanda did not pause, but something withdrawn took over her movements. Valanda effacing herself. It never ceased to astonish Mirbella how acolytes effaced themselves when they entered Mother Superior's presence. There, but not there. Mirbella had never quite achieved this, even when she left probation and entered advanced status. Valanda, too. Staring hard at Mirbella, Odrade said, "I know what reservations you hold in your breast, limits you place on your commitment to us. Well and good. I make no arguments about that because, by and large, your reservations are very little different from those held by any of us." Candor. "The difference, if you would know it, is in the sense of responsibility. I am responsible for my sisterhood. As much of it as still survives. They are a deep responsibility, and one I sometimes look at with a jaundiced eye." Valanda sniffed. Odrade appeared not to notice this as she continued. "The Bene Gesserit sisterhood has gone somewhat sour since the tyrant. Our contact with your honored maters has not improved matters. Honored maters have the stench of death and decadence about them, going downhill into the great silence." "Why do you tell me these things now?" Fear in Mirbella's voice. "Because somehow the worst of honored mater decadence did not touch you. Your spontaneous nature, perhaps. Although that has been dampened somewhat since Gamu. Your doing. We've just taken a little wildness out of you, given you a better balance. You can live longer and healthier because of it." "If I survive this..." Jerk of her head toward the table behind her. "Balance is what I want you to remember, Mirbella. Homeostasis. Any group choosing suicide, when it has other options, does so out of insanity. Homeostasis gone haywire." When Mirbella looked at the floor, Valanda snapped, "Listen to her, fool! She's doing her best to help you." "All right, Belle. This is between us." When Mirbella continued to stare at the floor, Odrade said, "This is Mother Superior giving you an order. Look at me." Mirbella's head snapped up, and she stared into Odrade's eyes. It was a tactic Odrade had used infrequently, but with excellent results. Acolytes could be reduced to hysteria by it, and then taught how to deal with their excessive response to emotions. Mirbella appeared to be more angered than fearful. Excellent. But now was a time for caution. "You have complained about the slow pacing of your education," Odrade said. "It was done with your needs foremost in our minds. Your key teachers all were chosen for steadiness, none of them impulsive. My instructions were explicit. Don't give you too many abilities too rapidly. Don't open a floodgate of powers that might be more than she can handle." "How do you know what I can handle?" Still angry. Odrade only smiled. When Odrade continued silent, Mirbella appeared flustered. Had she made a fool of herself before Mother Superior, before Duncan and these others? How humiliating. Odraid reminded herself it was not good to make Mirbella too conscious of her vulnerability. A bad tactic just now. No need to provoke her. She had a sharp sense of the germane, fitting herself into needs of the moment. That was a thing they feared might have its source in a motivation always to choose the path of least resistance. Let it not be that. Complete honesty now. The ultimate tool of Bene Gesserit education. The classical technique that bound acolyte to teacher. I will be at your side throughout your agony. If you fail, I will grieve. Duncan? Tears in her eyes. Any help he can give, he will be permitted to give. Mirbella looked up the rows of seats, and for a brief moment, her gaze locked with Idaho's. He lifted slightly, but Tamerlane's hand on his shoulder restrained him. They may kill my beloved, Idaho thought. Must I sit here and just watch it happen? But Odraid had said he would be permitted to help. There is no stopping this now. I must trust Dar. But God's below. She does not know the depth of my grief. If... He closed his eyes. Bell, Odraid's voice carried a sense of casting off, a knife edge in its brittleness. Belanda took Mirbella's arm and helped her onto the table. It bounced slightly, adjusting to the weight. This is the real shoot, Mirbella thought. She had only the remotest sense of straps being fastened around her, of purposeful movement beside her. This is the usual routine, Odraid said. Routine. Mirbella had hated the routines of becoming Bene Gesserit. All of that study, listening and reacting to proctors. She had particularly loathed the necessity to refine reactions she had believed adequate. But there could be no sloughing off under those watchful eyes. Adequate. What a dangerous word. This recognition had been precisely what they sought. Precisely the leverage their acolyte required. If you loathe it, do it better. Use your loathing as guidance. Home in on exactly what you need. The fact that her teachers saw so directly into her behavior, what a marvelous thing. She wanted that ability. Oh, how she wanted it. I must excel in this. It was a thing any honored mater might envy. She saw herself abruptly with a form of doubled vision, both Bene Gesserit and honored mater. A daunting perception. A hand touched her cheek, moved her head, and went away. Responsibility. I am about to learn what they mean by a new sense of history. The Bene Gesserit view of history fascinated her. How did they look at multiple pasts? Was it something immersed in a grander scheme? The temptation to become one of them had been overwhelming. This is the moment when I learn. She saw an oral syringe swing into position above her mouth. Belanda's hand moved it. We carry our grail in our heads, Odraid had said. Carry this grail gently if it comes into your possession. The syringe touched her lips. Mirbella closed her eyes, but felt fingers open her mouth. Cold metal touched her teeth. Odraid's remembered voice was with her. Avoid excesses. Overcorrect, and you always have a fine mess on your hands. The necessity to make larger and larger corrections. Oscillation. Fanatics are marvelous creators of oscillation. Our grail. It has linearity because each Reverend Mother carries the same determination. We will perpetuate this together. Bitter liquid gushed into her mouth. Mirbella swallowed convulsively. She felt fire flow down her throat into her stomach. No pain except the burning. She wondered if this could be the extent of it. Her stomach felt merely warm now. Slowly, so slowly she was several heartbeats recognizing it, the warmth flowed outward. When it reached the tips of her fingers, she felt her body convulse. Her back arched off the padded table. Something soft but firm replaced the syringe in her mouth. Voices. She heard them, and knew people were speaking, but could not distinguish words. As she concentrated on the voices, she became aware she had lost touch with her body. Somewhere, flesh writhed, and there was pain, but she was removed from it. A hand touched a hand and clasped it firmly. She recognized Duncan's touch. And, abruptly, there was her body and agony. Her lungs pained when she exhaled. Not when she inhaled. Then they felt flat and never full enough. Her sense of presence in living flesh became a thin thread that wound through many presences. She sensed others all around her, far too many people for the tiny amphitheater. Another human being floated into view. Mirbella felt herself to be in a factory shuttle, in space. The shuttle was primitive. Too many manual controls, too many blinking lights. A woman at the controls, small and untidy with the sweat of her labors. She had long brown hair, and it had been bound up in a chignon, from which paler strands escaped to hang around her narrow cheeks. She wore a single garment, a short dress of brilliant reds, blues, and greens. Machinery. There was awareness of monstrous machinery just beyond this immediate space. The woman's dress contrasted severely with the drab and dragging sense of machinery. She spoke, but her lips did not move. "Listen, you. When it comes time for you to take over these controls, don't become a destroyer. I'm here to help you avoid the destroyers. Do you know that?" Mirbella tried to speak, but had no voice. "Don't try so hard, girl," the woman said. "I hear you." Mirbella tried to shift her attention away from the woman. Where is this place? One operator, a giant warehouse, factory, everything automated. Webs of feedback lines centered into this tiny space with its complex controls. Thinking to whisper, Mirbella asked, "Who are you?" And heard her own voice roar, agony in her ears. "Not so loud. I'm your guide of the Mohalata, the one who steers you clear of the destroyers." "Dur, protect me," Mirbella thought. "This is no place. It's me." On that thought, the control room vanished. She was a migrant in the void, condemned never to be quiet, never to find a moment of sanctuary. Everything but her own fleeting thoughts became immaterial. She had no substance, only a wispy adherence that she recognized as consciousness. "I have constructed myself out of fog." Other memory came, bits and pieces of experiences she knew were not her own. Faces leered at her and demanded her attention, but the woman at the shuttle controls pulled her away. Mirbella recognized necessities, but could not put them into coherent form. "These are lives in your past." It was the woman at the shuttle controls. But her voice had a disembodied quality and came from no discernible place. "We are descendants of people who did nasty things," the woman said. "We don't like to admit there were barbarians in our ancestry. A reverend mother must admit it. We have no choice." Mirbella had the knack of only thinking her questions now. "Why must I?" "The victor's bread. We are their descendants. Victory often was gained at great moral price. Barbarism is not even an adequate word for some of the things our ancestors did." Mirbella felt a familiar hand on her cheek. "Duncan." The touch restored agony. "Oh, Duncan, you're hurting me." Through the pain, she sensed gaps in the lives being revealed to her, things withheld. "Only what you're capable of accepting now," the disembodied voice said. "Others come later when you're stronger, if you survive." Selective filter. Odrade's words. Necessity opens doors. Persistent wailing came from the other presences. Laments. "See? See what happens when you ignore common sense?" Agony increased. She could not escape it. Every nerve was touched with flame. She wanted to cry, to scream threats, to implore for help. Tumbling emotions accompanied the agony, but she ignored them. Everything happened along a thin thread of existence. The thread could snap. "I'm dying." The thread was stretching. It was going to break. Hopeless to resist, muscles would not obey. There probably were no muscles remaining to her. She did not want them anyway. They were pain. It was hell and would never end. Not even if the thread snapped. Flames burned along the thread, licking at her awareness. Hands shook her shoulders. "Duncan, don't." Each movement was pain beyond anything she had imagined possible. This deserved to be called the agony. The thread no longer was stretching. It was pulling back, compressing. It became one small thing, a sausage of such exquisite pain that nothing else existed. The sense of being became vague, translucent, transparent. "Do you see?" The voice of her Mohalata guide came from far away. "I see things." Not exactly seeing. A distant awareness of others. Other sausages. Other memory encased in the skins of lost lives. They extended behind her in a train whose length she could not determine. Translucent fog. It ripped apart occasionally, and she glimpsed events. No, not events themselves. Memory. "Share, witness," her guide said. "You see what our ancestors have done. They debase the worst curse you can invent. Don't make excuses about necessities of the times. Just remember, there are no innocents." Ugly. Ugly. She could hold on to none of it. Everything became reflections and ripping fog. Somewhere there was a glory that she knew she might attain. Absence of this agony. How glorious that would be. Where is that glorious condition? Lips touched her forehead, her mouth. "Duncan!" She reached up. "My hands are free." Her fingers slipped into remembered hair. "This is real." Agony receded. Only then did she realize that she had come through pain more terrible than words could describe. Agony? It seared the psyche and remolded her. One person entered, and another emerged. "Duncan." She opened her eyes, and there was his face directly above her. "Do I still love him?" "He is here. He is an anchor to which I clung in the worst moments. But do I love him? Am I still balanced?" No answer. Odrade spoke from somewhere out of view. "Strip those clothes off her. Towels, she's drenched. And bring her a proper robe." There were scurrying sounds, then Odrade once more. "Mirabella, you did that the hard way, I'm glad to say." Such elation in her voice. Why was she glad? Where is the sense of responsibility? Where is the grail I'm supposed to feel in my head? Answer me, someone! But the woman at the shuttle controls was gone. Only I remain. And I remember atrocities that might make an honored mater quail. She glimpsed the grail then, and it was not a thing, but a question. How to set those balances aright? Our household god is this thing we carry forward generation after generation. Our message for humankind, if it matures. The closest thing we have to a household goddess is a failed Reverend Mother. Chenoué there in her niche. Darwy Odred. Idaho thought of his Mentat abilities as a retreat now. Mirbella stayed with him as frequently as their duties allowed. He with his weapons development, and she recovering strength while she adjusted to her new status. She did not lie to him. She did not try to tell him she felt no difference between them. But he sensed the pulling away, elastic being stretched to its limits. My sisters have been taught not to divulge secrets of the heart. There's the danger they perceive in love, perilous intimacies, the deepest sensitivities blunted. Do not give someone a stick with which to beat you. She thought her words reassuring to him, but he heard the inner argument. Be free. Break entangling bonds. He saw her often these days in the throes of other memory. Words escaped her in the night. Dependencies. Group soul. Intersection of living awareness. Fish speakers. She had no hesitation about sharing some of this. The intersection. Anyone can sense nexus points in the natural interruptions of life. Deaths, diversions, incidental pauses between powerful events, births. Birth and interruption. They were in his bed. Even the chrono darkened. But that did not hide from them comas, of course. Other energies fed the sisterhood's curiosity. You never thought of birth as an interruption? A reverend mother finds that amusing. Amusing. Pulling away. Pulling away. Fish speakers. That was the revelation the Bene Gesserit absorbed with fascination. They had suspected, but Mirbella gave them confirmation. Fish speaker democracy became honored mater autocracy. No more doubts. The tyranny of the minority cloaked in the mask of the majority, Odred called it, her voice exultant. Downfall of democracy. Either overthrown by its own excesses or eaten away by bureaucracy. Idaho could hear the tyrant in that judgment. If history had any repetitive patterns, here was one. A drumbeat of repetition. First, a civil service law masked in the lie that it was the only way to correct demagogic excesses and spoils systems. Then the accumulation of power in places voters could not touch. And finally, aristocracy. The Bene Gesserit may be the only ones ever to create the all-powerful jury, Mirbella said. Juries are not popular with legalists. Juries oppose the law. They can ignore judges. She laughed in the darkness. Evidence. What is evidence except those things you are allowed to perceive? That's what law tries to control, carefully managed reality. Words to divert him. Words to demonstrate her new Bene Gesserit powers. Her words of love fell flat. She speaks them out of memory. He saw this bothered Odred almost as much as it dismayed him. Mirbella did not notice either reaction. Odred had tried to reassure him. Every new Reverend Mother goes through an adjustment period, manic at times. Think of the new ground under her, Duncan. How can I not think of it? First law of bureaucracy, Mirbella told the darkness. You do not divert me, love. Grow to the limits of available energy. Her voice was indeed manic. Use the lie that taxes solve all problems. She turned toward him in the bed, but not for love. Honored maters played the whole routine. Even a social security system to quiet the masses. But everything went into their own energy bank. Mirbella. What? Surprised at the sharpness of his tone. Didn't he know he was talking to a reverend mother? I know all of this, Mirabella. Any Mentat does. Are you trying to shut me up? Angry. Our job is to think like our enemy, he said. We do have a common enemy. You're sneering at me, Duncan. Are your eyes orange? Melange doesn't allow that, and you know... Oh. The Bene Gesserit need your knowledge, but you must cultivate it. He turned on a glow globe and found her flaring at him. Not unexpected, and not really Bene Gesserit. Hybrid. The word leaped into his mind. Was it hybrid vigor? Did the sisterhood expect this of Mirabella? The Bene Gesserit surprised you sometimes. You found them facing you in odd corridors, eyes unwavering, faces masked in that way of theirs, and behind the masks, unusual responses brewing. That was where Teg learned to do the unexpected. But this? Idaho thought he could grow to dislike this new Mirabella. She saw this in him naturally. He remained open to her as to no other person. Don't hate me, Duncan. No pleading, but something deeply hurt behind the words. I'll never hate you. But he turned off the light. She nestled against him almost the way she had before the agony. Almost. The difference tore at him. Honored maters see the Bene Gesserit as competitors for power, Mirabella said. It's not so much that men who follow my former sisters are fanatics, but they're made incapable of self-determination by their addiction. Is that the way we are? No, Duncan. You mean I could get this commodity at another store? She chose to assume he was talking about honored mater fears. Many would abandon them if they could. Turning toward him fiercely, she demanded a sexual response. Her abandon shocked him, as though this might be the last time she could experience such ecstasy. Afterward, he lay exhausted. I hope I'm pregnant again, she whispered. We still need our babies. We need. The Bene Gesserit need. No longer they need. He fell asleep to dream he was in the ship's armory. It was a dream touched by realities. The ship remained a weapons factory, as it actually had become. Odred was talking to him in the dream armory. I make decisions of necessity, Duncan. Little likelihood you'll break out and run amok. I am too much the Mentat for that. How self-important, his dream voice. I'm dreaming, and I know I dream. Why am I in the armory with Odred? A list of weapons scrolled before his eyes. Atomics. He saw big blasters and deadly dusts. Laser guns, no counting the various models. Bacteriologicals. The scroll was interrupted by Odred's voice. We can assume smugglers concentrate, as usual, on small things that bring a big price. Sue stones, of course. Still self-important. I'm not that way. Assassination weapons, she said. Plans and specifications for new devices. Theft of trade secrets is a big item with smugglers. I'm insufferable. There are always medicines and the diseases that require them, she said. Where is she? I can hear her, but I can't see her. Do honored maters know our universe harbors blackguards not above sowing the problem before providing the solution? Blackguards? I never use that word. All things relative, Duncan. They burn Lampadas and butchered 4 million of our finest. He awoke and sat upright. Specifications for new devices. There it was in delicate detail, a way to miniaturize the Holzman generators. 2 centimeters, no more, and much cheaper. How was that smuggled into my mind? He slipped out of bed, not awakening Mirabella, and groped his way to a robe. He heard her snuffle as he let himself out into the workroom. Seating himself at his console, he copied the design from his mind and studied it. Englobement for sure. He transmitted it to archives with a flag for Odred and Balanda. With a sigh, he sat back and examined his design once more. It vanished in a return to his dream scroll. Am I still dreaming? No. He could feel the chair, touch the console, hear the field buzzing. Dreams do that. The scroll produced cutting and stabbing weapons, including some designed to introduce poisons or bacteria into enemy flesh. Projectiles. He wondered how to stop the scroll and study details. It's all in your head. Humans and other animals bred for attack scrolled past his eyes, hiding the console and its projection. Futars? How did Futars get in there? What do I know about Futars? Disruptors replaced the animals. Weapons to cloud mental activity or interfere with life itself. Disruptors? I've never heard that name before. Disruptors were succeeded by Null G Seekers, designed to hunt specific targets. Those I know. Explosives next, including ones to spread poisons and bacteriologicals. Deceptives, to project false targets. Tag had used those. Energizers appeared next. He had a private arsenal of those. Ways of increasing capacities of your troops. Abruptly, the shimmering net from his vision replaced scrolling weapons, and he saw the elderly couple in their garden. They glared at him. The man's voice became audible. Stop spying on us! Idaho gripped the arms of his chair and jerked himself forward, but the vision disappeared before he could study details. Spying? He sensed a residue of the scroll in his hand. No longer visible, but a musing voice, masculine. Defenses often must take on characteristics of the attack weapons. Sometimes, however, simple systems can divert the most devastating weapons. Simple systems? He laughed aloud. Miles! Where the hell are you, Teg? I have your disguised attack vessels, inflated decoys. Empty except for a miniature Holzman generator and laser gun. He added this to his archive's transmissions. When he was finished, he asked himself once more about the visions. Influencing my dreams? What have I tapped? In every spare minute since becoming Tag's weapons master, he had been calling up archival records. There had to be some clue in all of that massive accumulation. Resonances and Tachyon theory held his attention for a time. Tachyon theory figured in Holzman's original design. Tekus, Holzman had called his energy source. A wave system that ignored light speed's limits. Light speed obviously did not limit fold space ships. Tekus. It works because it works, Idaho muttered. Faith. Like any other religion. Mentat squirreled away much seemingly inconsequential data. He had a storehouse marked Tekus and proceeded to go through it without satisfaction. Not even guild navigators professed knowledge of how they guided fold space ships. Ixion scientists made machines to duplicate navigator abilities, but still could not define what they did. Holzman's formulae can be trusted. No one claimed to understand Holzman. They merely used his formulae because they worked. It was the ether of space travel. You folded space. One instant you were here, and the next instant you were countless parsecs distant. Someone out there has found another way to use Holzman's theories. It was a full Mentat projection. He knew its accuracy from the new questions it produced. Mirbella's other memory ramblings haunted him now, even though he recognized basic Bene Gesserit teachings in them. Power attracts the corruptible. Absolute power attracts the absolutely corruptible. This is the danger of entrenched bureaucracy to its subject population. Even spoil systems are preferable, because levels of tolerance are lower, and the corrupt can be thrown out periodically. Entrenched bureaucracy seldom can be touched short of violence. Beware when civil service and military join hands. The honored major achievement. Power for the sake of power. An aristocracy bred from unbalanced stock. Who were those people he saw, strong enough to drive out honored majors? He knew it for a protection datum. Idaho found this realization profoundly dislocating. Honored majors fugitives, barbaric but ignorant in the way of all such raiders, even from before the Vandals, moved by impulsive greed as much as by any other force. Take Roman gold. They filtered all distractions out of awareness. It was a stupefying ignorance that faltered only when the more sophisticated culture insinuated itself into the... Abruptly he saw what Odrade was doing. Gods below, what a fragile plan! He pressed his palms against his eyes and forced himself not to cry out in anguish. Let them think I'm tired. But seeing Odrade's plan told him also he would lose Mirbella, one way or another. When are the witches to be trusted? Never. The dark side of the magic universe belongs to the Bene Gesserit, and we must reject them. Tylwyth Waff, Master of Masters. The great common room in the no-ship, with its tiered seating and raised platform at one end, was packed with Bene Gesserit sisters. More than had ever before been assembled. Chapter House was almost at a standstill this afternoon because few wanted to send proxies, and important decisions could not be delegated to service cadre. Black-robed reverend mothers dominated the assemblage in their aloof clusterings close to the stage. But the room swirled with acolytes in white-trimmed robes, and there were even the newly enrolled. Groups of white robes marking the youngest acolytes were sprinkled around in tight little groups, flocking for mutual support. All others had been excluded by convocation proctors. The air was heavy with melange-perfumed breaths, and it had that dank, overused quality it got when conditioning machinery was overloaded. Odors of the recent lunch, strong with garlic, rode on this atmosphere like an uninvited intruder. This and stories being spread throughout the room heightened tensions. Most kept their attention on the raised platform and the side door where Mother Superior must enter. Even while talking to companions or moving about, they focused on that place where they knew someone soon would enter and create profound changes in their lives. Mother Superior did not herd them all into a great common room with the promise of important announcements, unless something to shake the Bene Gesserit foundations was at hand. Valanda preceded Odrade into the room, mounting to the platform with that belligerent waddle which made her easily recognizable even at a distance. Odrade followed Valanda at 5 paces. Then came senior counselors and aides. Black-robed Mirbella, still looking somewhat dazed from her agony only 2 weeks past, among them. Dortwyla limped close behind Mirbella, with Tam and Shiana at her side. At the end of this procession came Stregi, carrying Teg on her shoulders. There were excited murmurs when he appeared. Males seldom shared assemblies, but everyone on Chapter House knew this was the goal of their Mentat Bashar, living now at the cantonment with all that remained of a Bene Gesserit military. Seeing the massed ranks of the sisterhood this way, Odrade experienced an empty feeling. Some ancient had said it all, she thought. Any damned fool knows one horse can run faster than another. Often at the minor assemblages here in this copy of a sports stadium, she had been tempted to quote that bit of advice. But she knew the ritual had its better purposes as well. Assembly showed you to one another. Here we are together, our kind. Mother Superior and attendants moved like a peculiar bundle of energy through the throng to the platform, her position of eminence at the edge of the arena. Mother Superior was never subjected to the mass scrimmage of assemblies. She never had elbows jammed into her ribs or felt the trotting of a neighbor's foot. She was never forced to move as others moved in a kind of inchworm flow composed of bodies pressed together in unwanted proximity. Thus did Caesar arrive, thumbs down on the whole damn thing. To Belanda, she said, "Let it begin." Afterward, she knew she would wonder why she had not delegated someone to make this ritual appearance and utter portentous words. Belanda would love the preeminent position, and for that reason must never have it. But perhaps there was some lower echelon sister who would be embarrassed by elevation, and would obey only out of loyalty, out of that underlying need to do what Mother Superior commanded. Gods, if there are any of you around, why do you permit us to be such sheep? There they were, Belanda preparing them for her. The battalions of the Bene Gesserit. They were not really battalions, but Odred often imagined ranked sisters, cataloging them by function. That one is a squad leader. That one is a captain general. This one is a lowly sergeant, and here is a messenger. The sisters would be outraged if they knew this quirk in her. She kept it well concealed behind an ordinary assignment attitude. You could assign lieutenants without calling them lieutenants. Terraza had done the same thing. Bell was telling them now that the sisterhood might have to make a new accommodation with their captive Tlilazu. Bitter words for Bell. "We have gone through the crucible, Tlilazu and Bene Gesserit alike, and we have come out changed. In a way, we have changed each other. Yes, we are like rocks rubbed against each other for so long that each takes on some of the conforming shape required by the other. But the original rock is still there at the core." The audience was becoming restive. They knew this was preliminary, no matter the hidden message within these hints about Tlilazu. Preliminary and relative in importance. Odred stepped to Belanda's side, signaling her to cut it short. "Here is Mother Superior." How hard the old patterns die. Does Bell think they don't recognize me? Odred spoke in compelling tones, just short of voice. "Actions have been taken that require me to meet on junction with honored Mater leadership. A meeting from which I may not emerge alive. I probably will not survive. That meeting will be partly distraction. We are about to punish them." Odred waited for murmurs to subside, hearing both agreement and disagreement in the sounds. Interesting. The ones who agreed were closer to the stage and farther back among new acolytes. Disagreement from advanced acolytes? Yes, they knew the warning. We dare not feed that fire. She pitched her voice lower, letting remotes carry it to those in the higher tiers. "Before leaving, I will share with more than one sister. These times require such caution." "Your plan? What will you do?" Questions were shouted at her from many places. "We will feint at Gamu. That should drive honored Mater allies to junction. We then will take junction and I hope capture the Spider Queen." "The attack will occur while you are on junction?" This question came from Garimi, a sober-faced proctor directly below Odred. "That is the plan. I will be transmitting my observations to the attackers." Odred gestured to Teg, seated on Stregi's shoulders. "The Bashar will lead the attack in person." "Who goes with you?" "Yes, who are you taking?" No mistaking the worry in those cries. So the word had not yet spread through Chapter House. "Tam and Dortwyla," Odred said. "Who will share with you?" Garimi again. "Indeed, that is the political question of most interest. Who may succeed Mother Superior?" Odred heard nervous stirring behind her. Valanda excited. Not you, Bell. You already know that. Mirbella and Shiana, Odred said. And one other, if Proctors care to name a candidate. Proctors formed little consulting groups, shouting suggestions from group to group, but no names were submitted. Someone had a question, though. Why Mirbella? Who knows Honored Maters better? Odred asked. That silenced them. Garimi moved closer to the stage and looked up at Odred with a penetrating stare. Don't try to mislead a reverend mother, Darwi Odred. After our feint at Gamu, they will be even more alert and reinforced on Junction. What makes you think we can take them? Odred stepped aside and motioned Stregi forward with Teg. Teg had been watching Odred's performance with fascination. He looked down now at Garimi. She was currently Chief Assignment Proctor, and no doubt had been chosen to speak for a block of sisters. It occurred to Teg then that this ludicrous position on the shoulders of an acolyte had been planned by Odred for reasons other than those she voiced. To put my eyes closer to a level with adults around me, but also to remind them of my lesser stature, to reassure them that a Bene Gesserit, if only an acolyte, still controls my movements. I will not go into all of the weaponry details at the moment, he said. Damn this piping voice. He had their attention, though. But we are going for mobility, for decoys that will destroy a great deal of the area around them if a laser gun beam hits them. And we are going to englobe Junction with devices to reveal the movements of their no-ships. When they continued to stare at him, he said, If Mother Superior confirms my previous knowledge of Junction, we will know our enemy's positions intimately. There should not be significant changes. Not enough time has passed. Surprise and the unexpected. What else did they expect from their Mentat Bashar? He stared back at Garimi, daring her to voice more doubts of his military ability. She had another question. Are we to presume that Duncan Idaho advises you on weapons? When you have the best, you would be a fool not to use it, he said. But will he accompany you as weapons master? He chooses not to leave the ship, and you all know why. What is the meaning of that question? He had deflected her and silenced her, and she did not like it. A man should not be able to maneuver a reverend mother that way. Odred stepped forward and put a hand on Teg's arm. Have you all forgotten that this Gola is our loyal friend, Miles Teg? She stared at particular faces in the throng, choosing one she was certain watchdogged the Comais and knew Teg was her father. Moving her gaze from face to face with a deliberate slowness that could not be misinterpreted. Is there one among you who dares cry nepotism? Then look once more at his record in our service. Sounds of the convocation became once more those in keeping with other graces they expected in assemblies. No more vulgar clash of demanding voices vying for attention. Now they fitted their speech into a pattern much like plain song, and yet not quite a chant. Voices moved and flowed together. Odred always found this remarkable. No one directed the harmony. It happened because they were Bene Gesserit. Naturally. This was the only explanation they needed. It happened because they were practiced in adjusting to each other. The dance of their everyday movements continued in their voices. Partners, no matter transitory disagreements. I will miss this. It is never enough to make accurate predictions of distressful events, she said. Who knows this better than we? Is there one among us who has not learned the lesson of the Kwisatz Haderach? No need to elaborate. Evil prediction should not alter their course. That kept Valanda silent. the Bene Gesserit were enlightened, not dullards who attack the bearer of bad tidings. Discount the messenger. Who could expect anything useful from the likes of that one? That was a pattern to be avoided at all costs. Will we silence disagreeable messengers, thinking the deep silence of death obliterates the message? The Bene Gesserit knew better than that. Death makes a prophet's voice louder. Martyrs are truly dangerous. Odred watched reflexive awareness spread through the room, even up to the highest tiers. We are entering hard times, sisters, and must accept that. Even Mirbella knows it. And she knows now why I was so anxious to make a sister of her. We all know it, one way or another. Odred turned and glanced at Belanda. No disappointment there. Bell knew why she was not among the chosen. It's our best course, Bell. Infiltrate. Take them before they even suspect what we're doing. Shifting her gaze to Mirbella, Odred saw respectful awareness. Mirbella was beginning to get her first batches of good advice from other memory. The manic stage had passed, and she was even regaining a fondness for Duncan. In time, perhaps, Bene Gesserit training assured that she would judge other memory on her own. Nothing in Mirbella's stance said, "Keep your lousy advice to yourself." She had historical comparisons and could not evade their obvious message. Don't march in the streets with others who share your prejudices. Loud shouts are often the easiest to ignore. I mean, look at them out there shouting their fool heads off. You want to make common cause with them? I told you, Mirbella. Now judge for yourself. To create change, you find leverage points and move them. Beware blind alleys. Offers of high positions are a common distraction paraded before marchers. Leverage points are not all in high office. They are often at economic or communication centers, and unless you know this, high office is useless. Even lieutenants can alter our course. Not by changing reports, but by burying unwanted orders. Bell sits on orders until she believes them ineffective. I give her orders sometimes for this purpose, so she can play her delaying game. She knows it, and yet she plays her game anyway. Know this, Mirbella. And after we share, study my performance with great care. Harmony had been achieved, but at a cost. Odred signaled that convocation was ended, knowing well that all questions had not been answered, nor even asked. But the unasked questions would come filtering through Bell, where they would get the most appropriate treatment. Alert ones among the sisters would not ask. They already saw her plan. As she left the great common room, Odred felt herself accept full commitment for choices she had made, recognizing previous hesitancy for the first time. There were regrets, but only Mirbella and Shiana might know them. Walking behind Belanda, Odred thought about the places I will never go, the things I will never see except as a reflection in the life of another. It was a form of nostalgia that centered on the scatterings, and this eased her pain. There was just too much for one person to see out there. Even the Bene Gesserit, with its accumulated memories, could never hope to catch up with all of it. Not with every last interesting detail. It was back to grand designs, the big picture, the mainstream, the specialties of my sisterhood. Here were essentials Mentats employed. Patterns, movements of currents, and what those currents carried, where they were going. Consequences. Not maps, but the flowings. At least I have preserved key elements of our jury-monitored democracy in original form. They may thank me for that one day. Seek freedom and become captive of your desires. Seek discipline and find your liberty. The Coda. Who expected the air machinery to break down? The rabbi asked his question of no one in particular. He sat on a low bench, a scroll clutched to his breast. The scroll had been reinforced by modern artifice, but it still was old and fragile. He was not sure of the time. Mid-morning, probably. They had eaten not long ago, food that could be described as breakfast. I expected it. He appeared to be addressing the scroll. Passover has come and gone, and our door was locked. Rebecca came to stand over him. Please, Rabbi, how does this help Joshua at his labors? We have not been abandoned, the rabbi told his scroll. It is we who have hidden ourselves away. When we cannot be found by strangers, where would anyone look who might help us? He peered up abruptly at Rebecca, owlish behind his glasses. Have you brought evil to us, Rebecca? She knew his meaning. Outsiders always think there's something nefarious about the Bene Gesserit, she said. So now I, your rabbi, am outsider. You estrange yourself, Rabbi. I speak from the viewpoint of the sisterhood you made me help. What they do is often boring, repetitious, but not evil. I made you help? Yes, I did that. Forgive me, Rebecca. If evil joins us, I have done it. Rabbi, stop this. They are an extended clan. And still, they keep a touchy individualism. Does an extended clan mean nothing to you? Does my dignity offend you? I tell you, Rebecca, what offends me. By my hand, you have learned to follow different books than... He raised the scroll as though it were a bludgeon. No books at all, Rabbi. Oh, they have a coda, but it's just a collection of reminders. Sometimes useful, sometimes to be discarded. They always adjust their coda to current requirements. There are books that cannot be adjusted, Rebecca. She stared down at him with ill-concealed dismay. Was this how he saw the sisterhood, or was it fear talking? Joshua came to stand beside her, hands greasy, black smears on forehead and cheeks. Your suggestion was the right one. It's working again. How long, I don't know. The problem is... You do not know the problem, the rabbi interrupted. The mechanical problem, Rabbi, Rebecca said. This no chambers field distorts machinery. We could not bring in frictionless machinery, Joshua said, too revealing, not to mention the cost. Your machinery is not all that has been distorted. Joshua looked at Rebecca with raised eyebrows. What's wrong with him? So Joshua trusted Bene Gesserit insights, too. That offended the rabbi. His flock sought guidance elsewhere. The rabbi surprised her then. You think I'm jealous, Rebecca? She shook her head from side to side. You display talents, the rabbi said, that others are quick to use. Your suggestion, fix the machinery? These others told you how? Rebecca shrugged. This was the rabbi of old, not to be challenged in his own house. I should praise you, the rabbi asked. You have power? Now you will govern us? No one, least of all I, ever suggested that, Rabbi. She was offended and did not mind showing it. Forgive me, daughter. That is what you call flip. I don't need your praise, Rabbi. And of course I forgive. Your others have something to say about this. The Bene Gesserit say fear of praise goes back to an ancient prohibition against praising your child, because that brings down the wrath of the gods. He bowed his head. Sometimes a bit of wisdom. Joshua appeared embarrassed. I'm going to try sleeping. I should be rested. He aimed a meaningful glance at the machinery area, where a labored rasping could be heard. He left them for the darkened end of the chamber, stumbling on a child's toy as he went. The rabbi patted the bench beside him. Sit, Rebecca. She sat. I am fearful for you, for us, for all of the things we represent. He caressed the scroll. We have been true for so many generations. His gaze swept the room. And we don't even have a minion here. Rebecca wiped tears from her eyes. Rabbi, you misjudge the sisterhood. They wish only to perfect humans and their governments. So they say. So I say. Government to them is an art form. You find that amusing? You arouse my curiosity. Are these women self-deluded by dreams of their own importance? They think of themselves as watchdogs. Dogs? Watchdogs. Alert to when a lesson may be taught. That is what they seek. Never try to teach someone a lesson he cannot absorb. Oh, it's these bits of wisdom. He sounded sad. And they govern themselves artistically. They think of themselves as a jury with absolute powers that no law can veto. He waved the scroll in front of her nose. I thought so. No human law, Rabbi. You tell me these women who make religions to suit themselves believe in a power greater than themselves. Their belief would not accord with ours, Rabbi. But I do not think it evil. What is this? This belief? They call it the leveling drift. They see it genetically and as instinct. Brilliant parents are likely to have children closer to the average, for example. A drift? This is a belief. That is why they avoid prominence. They are advisors, even kingmakers on occasion. But they do not want to be in the target foreground. This drift. Do they believe there is a drift maker? They don't assume there is. Only that there is this observable movement. So what do they do in this drift? They take precautions. In the presence of Satan, I should think so. They don't oppose the current, but seem only to move across it, making it work for them, using the back eddies. Oy! Ancient sailing masters understood this quite well, Rabbi. The sisterhood has what amounts to current charts, telling them places to avoid and where to make their greatest efforts. Again he waved the scroll. This is no current chart. You misinterpret, Rabbi. They know the fallacies about overwhelming machines. She glanced at the laboring machinery. They see us in currents machinery cannot breast. These little wisdoms, I do not know, daughter. Meddling in politics, I accept. But in holy matters, a leveling drift, Rabbi. Mass influence on brilliant innovators who move out of the pack and produce new things. Even when the new helps us, the drift catches the innovator. Who is to say what helps, Rebecca? I merely tell you what they believe. They see taxation as evidence of the drift, taking away free energy that might create more new things. A sensitized person detects it, they say. And these honored maters? They fit the pattern. Power-closed government intent on making all potential challengers ineffectual. Screen out the bright ones. Blunt intelligence. A tiny beeping sound came from the machinery area. Joshua was past them before they could stand. He bent over the screen that revealed the vents on the surface. They're back, he said. See? They dig in the ashes directly above us. Have they found us? The rabbi sounded almost relieved. Joshua watched the screen. Rebecca placed her head beside his, studying the diggers. 10 men with that dreaming look in their eyes of those who have been bonded to honored maters. They only dig at random, Rebecca said, straightening. You're sure? Joshua stood and looked into her face, seeking secret confirmation. Any Bene Gesserit could see it. Look for yourself, she gestured at the screen. They are leaving. They go to the Sligsty now. Where they belong, the rabbi muttered. Making workable choices occurs in a crucible of informative mistakes. Thus, intelligence accepts fallibility. And when absolute, infallible choices are not known, intelligence takes chances with limited data in an arena where mistakes are not only possible, but also necessary. Darwy Odrade. Mother Superior did not just board an outgoing lighter and transfer to any convenient no-ship. There were plans, arrangements, strategies, contingencies on contingencies. It took 8 hectic days. Timing with Teg had to be precise. Consultations with Mirbella ate up hours. Mirbella had to know what she faced. Discover their Achilles heel, Mirbella, and you have it all. Stay on the observation ship when Teg attacks, but watch carefully. Odrade took detailed advice from all who could help. Then came the vital signs implant and encrypting to transmit her secret observations. A no-ship and long-range lighter had to be refitted. Crew chosen by Teg. Belanda muttered and growled until Odrade intervened. You are distracting me. Is that your intent? Weaken me? It was late morning, 4 days before departure, and they were temporarily alone in the workroom. Weather clear but unseasonably cold, and air an ochre tinge from a dust storm that had blown across Central in the night. Convocation was a mistake. Belanda needed her parting shot. Odrade found herself snapping back at Belanda, who had become a bit too caustic. Necessary. To you, maybe. Saying goodbye to your family. Now you leave us here taking in each other's laundry. Did you just come up here to complain about the convocation? I don't like your latest comments on honored maters. You should have consulted us before spreading their parasites, Bell. It's time we made that clear. A known weakness. And what does a body do when afflicted by parasites? Odrade delivered this with a broad grin. Dar, when you assume this pseudo-humorous pose, I would like to throttle you. Would you smile as you did it, Bell? Damn you, Dar, one of these days. We don't have many more days together, Bell, and that's what's eating you. Answer my question. Answer it yourself. The body welcomes periodic delousing. Even addicts dream of freedom. Ah. Amentat peered from Belanda's eyes. You think addiction to honored maters could be made painful? In spite of your dreadful inability at humor, you still can function. A cruel smile flexed Belanda's mouth. I've managed to amuse you, Odrade said. Let me discuss this with Tam. She has a better head for strategy. Although, sharing softened her. When Belanda had gone, Odrade leaned back and laughed quietly. Softened? Don't go soft tomorrow, Dar, when you share. The Mentat stumbles on logic and misses the heart. She sees the process and worries about failure. What do we do if we open windows, Bell, and let in common sense, even hilarity? Puts more serious matters in perspective. Poor Belle, my flawed sister. Always something to occupy your nervousness. Odrade left Central on departure morning, much entangled in her thinking. An introspective mood, worried by what she had learned sharing with Mirbella and Shiana. I'm being self-indulgent. That offered no relief. Her thoughts were framed by other memory and almost cynical fatalism. Queen bees swarming. That had been suggested of honored maters. But Shiana. And Tam approves. This carried more in it than a scattering. I cannot follow into your wild play, Shiana. My task is to produce order. I cannot risk what you have dared. There are different kinds of artistry. Yours repels me. Absorbing lifetimes of Mirbella's other memory helped. Mirbella's knowledge was a powerful leverage on honored maters, but full of disturbing nuances. Not hypnotrance. They use cellular induction, a byproduct of their damned T-probes. Unconscious compulsion. How tempting to use it for ourselves. But this is where honored maters are most vulnerable. Enormous unconsciousness content locked in by their own decisions. Mirbella's key only emphasizes its danger to us. They arrived at the landing flat in the midst of a windstorm that buffeted them when they emerged from their car. Odrade had vetoed a walk through what remained of orchards and vineyards. Leaving for the last time. The question in Belanda's eyes as she said goodbye. In Shiana's worried frown. Does Mother Superior accept my decision? Provisionally, Shiana. Provisionally. But I have not warned Mirbella. So, perhaps I do share Tam's judgment. Dortwyla in the van of Odrade's party was withdrawn. Understandable. She has been there and watched her sisters eaten. Courage, sister. We are not yet defeated. Only Mirbella had appeared to take this in stride, but she was thinking ahead to Odrade's encounter with the Spider Queen. Have I armed Mother Superior sufficiently? Does she know in her guts how very dangerous this will be?